right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're doing something we don't do very often. We're talking about a Netflix original. Yes, we are actually talking about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. With me today is my buddy Q. You know him from Bird Road. He also is sort of my boss here at the All Points West Network, and he's my best friend. But Q is here. It's been a while since he's been on the show, but we actually have a couple episodes coming up that he is going to be a part of, and I'm always glad to have him here on the show because I have such a good time. I'm sitting here like on the verge of laughing right now just trying to record this intro because this conversation was just so ridiculous and a little all over the place, but a lot of fun. So I seriously entered the conversation with two puzzle pieces. Ended up with three, but it went in all kinds of directions. We ended up talking for like a solid 50 minutes, even without that much prepared ahead of time. So it just ended up being a lot of fun. So we're going to get into that in a second. I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all these movies. So, without any further ado, let's get into the conversation. So, today on the show...
I don't want to do it. I changed my mind.
Let's cancel this right now.
Cancel. Dump it. Just dump it. Finish. Nobody wants to hear it.
Well, you know what? With me today is my best buddy, Q. I haven't talked to him in a little bit, but how's it going, Q?
Bad.
we took the month of September off for Bird Road.
That what we did?
And now it's October 16th and we haven't started.
No, it's midway through October.
Again, yeah. But he's here.
We haven't talked about the Joker. We haven't talked about
the
Addams Family.
We text each other like teenage girls about Joker, but
we haven't talked about we haven't talked about the Democratic debates. We haven't talked about...
Were there Democratic debates?
Last night.
Oh, shit.
We haven't talked about... I don't know.
Well, you know what we are going to talk about?
The movie Cuck.
Tune in next time for that. But we're going to talk about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. I just realized it's called a Breaking Bad movie, not the Breaking
Bad.
Yeah,
implying that there could be future Breaking Bad movies. Hmm. Like, if we want to just find out what happened to, like, the corpse of Gustavo Fring or something like that.
That seems like a good place to kick off.
I think, here's my move.
Okay.
Breaking Bad, Walt story, prequel. The whole story, I don't know how much you remember, really, of Breaking Bad. This show has been off the air for so fucking long.
We're going to talk about that as we go through this episode, because, that's the biggest problem with this movie.
Here's my pitch to you. Right. I walk up and I'm, you know, you're Vince Gilligan and I'm pitching you. Here's my idea. Breaking Bad, prequel, college age Walt.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally get to see what the fuck it was that happened with that falling out with the Schwartzes by the way, not to besmirch your people, but,
are you suggesting that
he went into business, he's upset about a business dealing from the outcome of a venture that he started with a couple named Schwartz. Come on. What do you think? What do you think happened there?
I've got a few thoughts.
I'm asking
on
you,
what might have happened.
I'm asking you as a man named Rosen,
you know,
what do you think happened there?
I'm lucky in this situation in that I don't remember, so I don't have to answer the questions.
Well, they left it very open to interpretation. Remember, this was actually the animating force of the TV show.
Right, right.
Was Walt's his sort of what is that feeling that I'm trying to like put the word to that not recrimination, but like it was his own hubris, kind of. Like he had this hubris where he felt like the world. We meet Walter White, and we think he's like this cuddly dad who's just trying to do his best, but we come to find out he's this guy who harbors all this resentment and really thinks that the world has screwed him over and thinks that he deserves
the world screwed him over. He's the original that guy, which is such a big character now and everything.
I mean, I would say like Tony Soprano is the original that guy.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
I mean, like, true. You're talking about like the anti-hero who, you know, you think might have like a heart of gold, but by the time he's finished, you realize he never had any heart at all. Like that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But anyway, I think that that would be cool. And young Walter White, graduate student, Timothy Chalamet.
Mm, okay.
You watching that? You watching that?
Okay, I got you. Yeah. I like it. So we're going with sexy Walter White. Is that, that's the...
I mean, was there ever a different kind of Walter White?
I don't know. Was he sexy? I guess he was. I don't know.
Why don't you ask these fucking stains in my drawer?
If you haven't been able to tell, people listening at home, this is going to be a little bit of a different episode today, but it's still going to be a main episode of the show.
What does that mean? What does that mean? It means it's a different episode.
It's going to be a little loose.
Why are you othering me?
I'm othering you. You're getting one of the most anticipated movies of the year coming up, where we do the Parasite episode in a couple weeks. So don't complain too much, but no, I think.
How mad will you be if I jump the gun and I know where I can stream, like steal, Parasite? How mad would you be if I just did that?
I'd be so mad at you. I think that's the first time pirating movies has come up on this show, and I'm really angry right now.
Well, that's your failing that you haven't mentioned the concept of pirating movies.
I don't ever want to talk about pirating movies. Why do you know like, where we can watch?
Well,
it
while
right
I was
now?
Watching this, while I was watching this on my iPhone 8, it was.
You know, if you know where we can watch it right now, we could scrap this episode and we can go watch it and do it. But
literally, come back and do it. Why? Clearly, you did not like El Camino.
No, I did. I didn't love it, but I did.
But we get into that at the end, right?
Well, like we that's actually that shows that you haven't really listened in a while, because we've kind of scrapped the overall review. I mean, it just kind of comes naturally throughout.
I do listen. I just listened to Joker.
Yeah. We say it throughout nowadays, you know. In the beginning days, we very specifically segmented it off at the end, you know. But now it just kind of happens throughout.
Listen, I can't be keeping like my all 10 of my fingers wrapped around the every single one of my properties. All right, I don't just simply don't have the time.
So I know I only have a couple of puzzle pieces for this one. I don't know how many you've
got.
Well,
I came up with
there.
A few.
You got a few? Okay, good. Yeah. Well, we're gonna kick it off with you first for your first puzzle piece, and we'll see as we go back and forth. Maybe I'll come up with an extra one or two along the way. But going for El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. What do you got for your first one?
Okay, so for the first one, I'm going to sort of echo some of the main criticism in this that I've seen out there from this movie, which I can sign on to, and that is the idea that this movie was not necessary. Mm-hmm. It was not required to close out the story or add an epilogue to this story. And from intensely popular television shows that had their own completely unnecessary movies that were basically just love letters to fans. This is a sort of a two-parter, Sex in the City and Veronica Mars, which I think, you know, haha, funny, silly, you know, like Sex in the City, Veronica Mars, comparing it to a Breaking Bad movie. But really, think about it.
It makes sense.
Who asked for those fucking movies? Yeah, <right. laughs> Like, nobody asked for those movies.
Yeah.
And they were basically just love letters to their fans. They were nonetheless successful and based on, you know, this opaque regime that Netflix runs, where you kind of have to read between the lines to figure out if something did well. Based on what I've heard, at least, it seems like the Breaking Bad, like people were streaming this movie.
Mm-hmm.
People did watch it.
Right.
Which goes into my, like, I guess if we're going to sort of casually parallel park into the criticism that we're talking about the movie. I agree that it wasn't necessary, but the way that I've sort of thought of this movie is like, imagine one of your favorite TV shows that's been off for 6 or 7 years, and somebody just tells you one day, hey, there's like 3 new episodes of it. Awesome. Like, was that necessary?
Right.
I mean, yeah. Why does that have to be a part of the conversation?
Sure, absolutely. And I think that the question about whether or not it's necessary is a big one, and especially because I think that the success of this, and you're right, I haven't like looked at numbers or anything, but this, I think, you know, for all intents and purposes, it is considered a success. And I think we're going to see more of this going forward. I mean, this isn't exactly the first one. I mean, they've been doing this for a while. Like, you used those two specific examples, Sex and the City, Veronica Mars. But, I mean, it's been happening for a while. I think we're going to, especially now, continue to see a lot more of this. I think Netflix is going to continue to do a lot more of this because, you know, they keep wanting to create more and more original content. And it seems to be a really easy way to do it, going back to these shows that they've, you know, got rights to and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's to stop, you know, what's to stop anybody from doing it? What's to stop Netflix from doing a Friends movie?
Sure.
Like, I mean, just like an extra, you know, half season of Friends. Or I think back then TV shows were like 40 episode seasons back then. But, you know, an extra like 7 or 8 episodes of Friends, right? 20 minutes, 210 minutes.
Speaking of Friends, because that's another old one, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about this Breaking Bad actually being pretty damn old. Like, you're so right. This movie, one thing that it really needed, I this isn't really what we normally do on the show, is like go into straight up criticisms, but like, this movie really needed a refresher at the beginning. And I actually watched like a little YouTube recap like a few days before I watched this. And even that didn't like do enough for me. Like, there were still so many little things where I was like, wait, what is
well,
this?
Well, looking backwards at Breaking Bad, and I was a pretty big fan of it, but very late to the game. And I think like you, we both sort of like binged it during its last season or something, right?
Yeah, both of us.
Yeah. So, and then caught the last season live. Now, one thing I will say, and I'm going to get roasted for this, but I stand by it, and you can't fucking prove me wrong because I'm not wrong. People get, I think you and I might have been having this conversation in the last couple of years about how, honestly, for the most part, unless you're in like a field like athletics or something like that, you get better with age until you get to be about 65, 70, and then you start to lose your faculties and you start to suck at whatever you do. TV makers, writers, creators, showrunners, directors, artists, whatever you want to call it, they get better. Mm-hmm. I say that to say this, Better Call Saul has surpassed Breaking Bad.
I agree.
100%. It is a better TV show. 100%. It's just a simply better TV show now than Breaking Bad was at its height.
Yeah.
Every single episode of Better Call Saul is throwing 110 miles an hour, and you're blown away at the end of it. Even the setup episodes and the slow episodes are just fucking whiz-bang insane. And you can't say that about Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad was a great show, maybe one of the greatest ever. And I know that people will shit on me for saying this, but I mean, it's become a better show. I think it's fascinating to look back at Breaking Bad as a relic of the sort of the real silver age of prestige television. Mm-hmm. Because now everything that comes on is kind of like a carbon copy of prestige television. You see shows that that are trying to sort of mimic. We've talked before on this podcast about how, you know, there are people out there who try to take an A24 movie and just kind of do an impression of an A24 movie. Yeah. And they're like, oh, look, it's like that kind of style. And it's like, yeah, but it's just style. There's no substance.
Right.
That's what's happening a lot these days, I think. And they're looking at things like, they're looking at Mad Men. They're looking at, you know, as far as period goes. They're looking at Sopranos as far as genre goes. And they're looking at Breaking Bad as far as that sort of like psycho tension thriller type stuff goes. And everything is kind of a copy. So Breaking Bad, yeah, was great for that moment in time. I just think Better Call Saul is a better TV show than it ever was. So, you know, whatever, bring out the pitchfork.
Now, and you know, just one more point on that before I get to my first puzzle piece. If moving forward, it went from Breaking Bad to Better Call Saul and they got better. I mean, this is obviously made now. Are they employing some of what they learned over these years? Do you think that this follows up Better Call Saul in a good way, or do you think that they're kind of falling back to Breaking Bad era what they were, you know, capable of?
Tonally, they definitely went back to the Breaking Bad style. Mm. And I mean, like, it's kind of hard when the character who was on screen for 50% of a series is on screen for 100% of a movie, and you know, like, it's kind of hard to draw those kind of distinctions because it's like, it's just Jesse up there, and you're just completely reminded. from everything that happens, from the scene, the perennially Jesse scene, that I was worried, because to answer your question, like, I thought that they were going to do something like make they do dark Batman, you know? I thought they were going to do dark Jesse,
right,
who's like not Jesse anymore, who's like completely changed, oh, and he's like, you know, wearing the black leather jacket. But the scene with Robert Forster,
mm-hmm,
where he says, I'm 96% sure right, that you're the guy, and he's so sure of himself and he's so wrong.
Yeah.
That's perfect Jesse. I was like, thank God they did that, because that wouldn't be that character without him getting a little too overconfident and fucking up.
Right.
And I thought it was perfect. So, like, you know, I don't think that it's analogous even to be able to compare it to one of these more latter day Better Call Saul episodes, which are funny because they're like set in the years like 2004 to 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you forget that Breaking Bad itself was only, even though it lasted, I think it was on air for 7 years, but it had five seasons, right? Five seasons, right, spread over 7 calendar years.
Mm-hmm.
All of Breaking Bad took place in the course of like 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause at the very beginning of the series, he's celebrating his 50th birthday with the bacon on, you know, the bacon broken up in the shape of 50. And then at the end, he's breaking up his own bacon and it's 52. So he was it's only about 2.5 years that the whole show spanned, which means that what we saw, this movie that we just watched, took place sometime in like 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So even that is kind of, you know, it's a relic. These things are kind of relics by now.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, and they do a great job of recreating that, as they do on, you know, the setting is always just so perfect. They do such a
so
great
realized.
Job. Yeah, yeah.
It's always so realized.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. That's I think that's just like a Vince Gilligan thing. Like that's his trademark. It certainly.
So what do you got, Dave?
So yeah, I'm going to go for my first one. Actually, kind of just fits in neatly with your first two, Sex and the City and Veronica Mars, but it kind of goes in the opposite direction. It's a movie, well, it's a TV series that was based on a movie series, and that is Ash vs. Evil Dead. And the reason why, okay, I bring up Ash vs. Evil Dead, again, like you're talking about, was this movie necessary? Ash vs. Evil Dead, the unfortunate series finale, because it didn't get picked up for the fourth and fifth seasons that they had hoped for, they left it in a place of Ash being in the future. And there's still evil out there, and he's still going to have to take care of that evil. And the alternate ending of Army of Darkness, all the way back in 1992, I believe it was Ash drinking too many drops of the magic potion and ended up sleeping into the future, where he's going to end up most likely having to deal with deadites in the future. So basically, nothing has changed. We just watched three seasons of a show to just wind up right back where the ending was, at least the alternate ending. And so here's kind of the opposite direction. It's taking a series. We already had an ending, and now we end up basically in the same place at the end of the movie as we assumed would have happened at the end of the series.
Yeah, they definitely didn't play any kind of tricks or games and like bring anybody back to life. They didn't do anything where it was like, the thing I was most worried about going into this, and I never should have been, because Vince Gilligan is a storyteller with some integrity,
sure,
and a creator who has, you know, a pretty fully realized vision of what he wants to do. The thing I was going to worry about was like, that I worried about was it would be like, you know, fade cut from Jesse in the El Camino back to Walt's body, and then Walt's hand moves a little bit and he's not actually dead,
right,
and then it's like Walt in a hospital and somehow he like eludes authorities again, and I was so worried they were going to do something like that, much like the Ash versus Evil Dead series, which I really only watched two and a half seasons of. I didn't finish the last half season.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of lost me a little bit. The scene where he's like slipping around in the sperm donation center, I think I shut it off there and I never turned it back on.
That was a little too much for you.
It was a bit much, and I could tell that they were just gonna like swing for the fences with, you know,
yeah,
in that respect.
Well, if nothing else, the first episode of the series makes it all worthwhile. So, like,
yeah,
if nothing else, anything that came after that, at least we had that. So,
and you as a fan, I mean, you're glad they did those. It's not like you have some weird fealty to the original intellectual property where you're like, don't mess with it, don't fuck
it up.
No,
it's
like, if somebody's like, give a little more Bruce Campbell doing silly shit, like, you're there for it.
I waited my entire adult life for it. Absolutely.
Well, that might be a bad example then. But...
Well, what do you got for your next one?
So let me keep doing this thing where I'm like, sort of, since I seem to have probably like three times as many as you, let me do this thing where I sort of package them up together a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to, I guess what the common theme is with these two are machinations. The way things work in the worlds that are built, right? We talked about how Vince Gilligan sort of builds out these really detailed worlds. He only really had 2.5. This could have been a whole season of TV if he wanted to build out this world a little bit more. Of course, his famous calling card with Breaking Bad was always like, introducing science. Like there was some science behind something that someone did, whether it was like practical applied science of, you know, creating a gun turret out of spare parts, or whether it was, you know, chemistry, fashioning ricin out of beans, or out of I forget what kind of beans that was that he used. But okay, so the way things work in this world, two picks that are not really much like each other: Triple Frontier, Netflix's earlier foray into big film that I think came out early this year.
I think it was in January. Yeah,
that was starred Ben Affleck and Oscar Isaac and a cast of other people. Who else was in that? This guy that I don't really know much about, this, who everybody says is like a big deal.
Every action guy was in it, but I'm drawing a blank on more names. Lucas
or something like that,
or whatever. Was he in it?
No, that guy.
No, all those people were in it though.
So Triple Frontier was a fun movie, and it kind of left me in a similar way to this El Camino movie, where I was like, "Oh, that was great. I'm glad I watched that." Mm. It was a movie where it was what you like to think of as sort of like an A to B movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, these guys have to get from this place to this place. These are the things. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the beginning of the old Castlevania games, where they would show you like, you got to get from here to there. These are the things that are in your way.
Right.
And they kind of zoom out and they show you the problem writ large. And then they zoom back in and show how you tackle it. Right. And that's what we got with Breaking Bad, El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. It was a situation where Jesse was trying to, you know, we knew what he needed to do. He needed to scoop up so many gold coins, right? He needed to get, he needed to get money. He needed to pay a, basically an NPC, mm-hmm. which is what Robert Forster's character was, who's like, you know, bring me $1,800 more than what you have, and I can do the thing that you need me to do. And he achieved the mission. He finished the mission. And it was very much the same with Triple Frontier. Did you get a chance to see that movie?
I did. Yeah, I watched it. It was all right. It was pretty good.
It was fine. Yeah, it was a good little action movie. And from the beginning of that movie, they lay it out. They're like, okay, success in this mission looks like this. We're going to do this heist. It's going to go down like this. We know where the money is. We're going to get out this way. This is our escape route. We're going to have to take this helicopter. And it's kind of like laid out in a very similar way. And I almost said Ocean's 11, but Ocean's 11 was way more, I think, realized and way more clever.
Sure.
This was like hard charging, smashing through. Fuck, man, I got to walk into a room full of people that I'm going to probably have to shoot, and I'll just fucking figure it out on the fly. Whereas everything in movies like Ocean's 11 are more well thought out and clever, and you realize later there was always a plan.
Yeah.
If it was Walt as the protagonist of this movie, there would have always been a plan. But since it was Jesse, in keeping with that character, a lot of it was flying by the seat of his pants,
exactly.
Which I thought was great and reminded me a lot of Triple Frontier. Also, the way things physically worked in this movie, the way that the narrative functioned, reminded me of one of our favorites, Memento, which was, obviously a very memorable movie for a lot of people. But the reason I bring it up here is because of the games that it played with memory and with the linear nature of storytelling and with the way that it would jump, you know, kind of in a, again, non-linear way, back and forth, and show things happening outside of a traditional timeline.
Sure.
I thought that they did a great job not dwelling too much, although a little bit of the Todd stuff I wasn't really that into.
I like him. It was a little weird that he obviously doesn't look quite the same as he
doesn't look the same at all anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird, but
you know what's crazy? You know he met Kirsten Dunst in that movie and they ended up getting married.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in that TV show.
Right,
the show. Season 2 of Fargo.
Fargo.
And they ended up like getting together with each other. That's such a weird, I mean, like, more power to you, man. You're batting way out of your league there. Yeah. Kirsten Dunst, but congrats.
Congrats, dead-eyed bro. Freak.
Yeah. I always thought, somebody told me once when Breaking Bad came out, somebody was like, you know that's Matt Damon's little brother? And I believed it for years.
Oh, God.
I was like, damn, that's Matt Damon's little brother? I believe it. It looks like fucking, like if somebody like scooped out a bunch of Matt Damon.
That makes me angry to hear. Somebody was passing that off as
truth. That was a thing at some point.
Well, I think those are both good puzzle pieces. I do want
to... Oh, you think they're good?
I do.
Great.
I think they're good.
Glad.
I want to circle back to something, though, that you said there, though, while you were talking about Memento. You said one of our favorite movies.
Don't you love Memento? Didn't you and I watch that a bunch?
No, I don't. I like it. Don't get me wrong. I've only ever seen it the one time when it first came out. And I probably would love it if I watched it again, but I don't think we ever watched that together.
Must have been with somebody else I hate.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm going to go with another puzzle piece here. This is actually one I just thought of while you were talking there. I'm going to talk about Fargo, which I think both the movie and the series, you know, they both kind of fit just that weird little like small town crime kind of situation. And this focusing just more so on a few oddball characters, which a lot of, you know, the Fargo series was that way, like focusing in on these weird criminals.
You know, especially season one.
Yeah.
Like, where, especially when they sort of let us inside of the Lester character, and everything that he's doing is sort of flying by the seat of his pants, and he's fucking up left and right, yeah, and barely surviving, and he has, he has killers on his trail. Yeah, I think I see that. That's a good pull.
I feel like if I rewatch any, like, you know, drama type series, like not just like a silly comedy, it's going to be a Fargo series. I really want to watch those again, especially because I was baked out of my mind when we watched season two together.
Yeah. So I want to, like, I don't know, since you don't really have that many, I'm going to, let me throw a couple out there. I was getting through this movie really heavy Michael Mann vibes.
Hmm.
And I couldn't really put my finger on it because all my favorite Michael Mann stuff is his L.A. stuff, right? I love Collateral. Mm-hmm. I loved the TV show Luck, which was
ill-fated
because, yeah, they killed a bunch of horses and they had to cancel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a great show, man. Incredible. Dustin Hoffman on TV as a main character on a TV show. Mm. Fucking insane. And like Nick Nolte, it was just packed with stars. Incredible show that they just couldn't get off the ground because they couldn't stop fucking murdering horses. Anyway, I had to dig a little deep back to some Michael Mann that I hadn't actually seen since I was younger. I don't think I've seen this since I was a teenager, so I don't really remember much of it, but I remember loving it. 1981's Thief. You remember Thief?
I do not, no.
Thief was starring, it was a Michael Mann movie. It was starring James Caan, Tuesday Weld, which shows you how old it was in a Tuesday Weld in it. Mm. Willie Nelson, Robert Prosky. It was a American like neo-noir crime film. It was just what you would expect from Michael Mann in the 80s. It was sort of like subdued, but also hard-charging. It was where James Caan played a jewel thief. He was an ex-con who was like doing the whole like one more, I gotta just do this one more job,
right,
to get out for good, you know, that whole situation. And it made me think of like a filmmaker who I don't think I know enough about on it, honestly, but who, how do you put this? Like, there are people who you might not be into, you might not be specifically familiar with their work, like you don't, you're not like a fan of it per se, but you're aware of the impression or the indentation that it's made on culture. And for me, I just kind of wanted to throw like the whole catalog of Sergio Leone out there, like all of it, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Once Upon a Time in the West, Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, My Name is Nobody, Fistful of Dynamite. All of this stuff is the Jesse story.
Sure.
You know, it's this like lone hero who's conflicted and has made mistakes and is trying to get out of this life, but doesn't really have a place to go. And is just trying to find whatever the next horizon is, whatever the next frontier is.
And it ends with a draw, you know, a showdown thing. Yeah. It's totally a Western. I mean, he took these characters that we haven't seen in, you know, what, 8 years or whatever, and threw them into a Western, basically.
Yeah. Specifically, one of the less traditional style, I mean, like, it's that thing where, it's that, like, Tarantino thing where you can make a Western out of, like, a crazy ninja movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you know. But one of the ones that really kind of... that I do remember seeing, I actually have seen this before, is Once Upon a Time in America. Do you remember that or no?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those movies that I think I saw in high school and don't really remember very well, but I certainly remember it.
Yeah. So with De Niro and James Woods and Elizabeth McGovern, Joe Pesci, it was a really old movie. It was from 84. Mm. I too saw it in high school because that wasn't exactly the kind of movie I was watching when I was like, you know, 3 years old or whatever. but it had that same dynamic of like this guy who's, you know, he's sort of paid his dues, not paid his dues. That's the wrong way of saying it. He's paid a price for a bad life that he's lived. And in his mind, I think he thinks it's even now. He carries guilt and weight for the bad things that he's done. But he also thinks like, hey, I deserve a shot right now.
Right.
Because I'm still a young person. I still have my whole life ahead of me. And I've had horrible retribution, you know, enacted upon me. So, you know, the slate is clean. And if I can just pull off this one last thing, then maybe I get a happy ending after all. Or just an ending that's not so abrupt and violent.
Sure. Yeah. That is kind of a thing I feel like I've seen in so many movies, but I don't really have a lot of good examples, but it does seem like it comes from that Western world.
Well, it's the thing where you and I talk all the time about, like, there's an entire 50 or 60 years of Hollywood that inform the last 20, 25 years of Hollywood. You and I, and I think a lot of people are our age who don't try to front like they're film nerds, but are like, just like, fans of movies and like fans of cinema, but are not what you would consider film nerds. We don't try to front like we think Rafifi is great. Like, I don't try to front like Citizen Kane is great. Sure. I'm sorry. It's not really that fucking good. If you compare it to Venom, to Venom, it's not that great. Venom's incredible compared to fucking Citizen Kane. Can I ask you something?
There's a take.
You're a film guy, right?
Sure.
You're supposed to be a film guy.
Yeah.
Fucking Fade In. The greatest movie of all time.
Uh-huh.
Fade In. He's like, Rosebud falls over. Housekeeper walks in. Rest of the movie is about what was Rosebud. Who heard him say Rosebud? Nobody heard him say it.
You know what would be the best thing? Is if you hadn't actually seen Citizen Kane, and that was like a critic parody or something, and that's what you thought the movie was, you know, and you just like totally threw that out there as what the movie is.
That is first of all, you're betraying your own ignorance right now. You're telling on yourself. Because what you're telling everybody is that you haven't actually seen Citizen Kane.
Oh no, I'm again one of those movies I'm sure I watched in high school and have not seen since then. And you know what? I'm going to tell you right now, just a total aside. I went and saw the 40th anniversary of Alien two nights ago in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And about 30 minutes in, I was like, have I seen this? Like, I didn't remember a single fucking scene in the movie. Even the chest bursting scene, which of course everybody knows.
No, that's the start. That's the start, though.
No. But even that scene, in my mind, it happened the way it happened. You're in Spaceballs.
Spaceballs, yeah.
Yeah. So I seriously, my brain.
But that's the beginning of, like, when we talk about, like, what's okay, what's in our attention span.
Yeah.
That, what was Alien, 78, something like that?
Yeah.
That's the beginning of when it's okay to start paying attention in movies. Mm-hmm. That's like when, like, everything before that, you can kind of look and see, like, okay, well, I mean, I see, again, like, it's just very little. You know, that's why I was texting with you when I was doing this, because as astute listeners know, I have a little kid, and I went and saw, I think it was like the 75th or 80th or maybe 100th. I don't know, fucking whatever. But it was a 35 millimeter showing of Wizard of Oz.
I went to that.
God damn, man, that movie holds up.
Yeah,
that movie will be watchable in 50 years, like in 100 years from now. When everything looks like fucking Gemini Man and everything is in 190 frames per second and looks like a washed out soap opera, that movie will still look and feel and, like, hit your eye and hit your ear perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible movie. Citizen Kane is garbage. I saw it maybe 5 years ago. It's not a good movie. You'll be bored out of your mind. Everybody, this is one of those things where people tell you things mm-hmm. because they feel like that's what they're supposed to say.
Yeah.
And it's not true. How did anybody know he said Rosebud? How did anyone know? He was in a room alone. That's an enormous plot hole. In the first 30 seconds of the fucking movie, there's a plot hole that undermines the entire premise of the fucking movie. That's the greatest movie ever made.
God, no. Like, now I kind of want to watch it.
Don't bother. Oh, yeah. You guys came for the El Camino piecing it together
episode.
We're
just shitting on film history.
And you're staying for me shitting on Citizen Kane.
Well, I got one more puzzle piece. Why don't I drop this one on you? This is a Mel Gibson movie from 1999 called Payback.
Yes, I
wanted to bring this up because Jesse is so set on just getting his $1,800, not an even $2,000, and Mel Gibson is so set on getting $70,000, not just 70, the 000. Whole $130,000 that was stolen. So
owed.
It's just that moment of the movie just totally reminded me of it. Right immediately when it happens, I was like, oh, just like Payback. That's awesome.
Underrated funny movie.
Hell yeah.
That movie's like got some real funny parts to it.
Hell yeah.
And tonally, who's the director of that? Because I feel like that became when was that? 1999?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's one of those movies that has a director.
Every movie that was set in like New York or Chicago or Boston for the next 10 years looked exactly like that movie.
Oh yeah. That movie was so freaking good. It was directed by Brian Helgeland, but I believe there was a different version that came out also from a different director maybe it was the same director. I thought it was a different director got to make a different cut of the movie.
That movie was good, man.
So good.
I remember seeing it and thinking to myself, like, the how about this for a stretch from Brian Helgeland, mm-hmm. who was a writer and a director and has some pretty good directing credits.
Sure.
But is got just like a murderer's row of writing credits. Yeah. How about this? So he directed 42, which was a Jackie Robinson biopic. He directed A Knight's Tale, underrated, another movie that was sort of a genre send-up that was kind of like a comedic version of a genre movie. Payback and I guess like a season of Tales from the Crypt. The Order. Did you ever see The Order or no?
I think so. That sounds familiar.
Okay, fine.
Oh yeah, Heath Ledger.
Not bad. How about this? Listen to this screenplay and writing work. Mystic River. Mm. Knight's Tale. Payback. The Postman, which is a favorite of some friends of ours. Conspiracy Theory, underrated bad movie. L.A. Confidential. He wrote 42, wrote Robin Hood, which was pretty good. Green Zone, underrated movie. Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3 remake, which itself was a very underrated movie, the one with Denzel. And it's got some stuff in the pipeline. Wild
Bunch.
Currently
working on a Game of Thrones spinoff.
Damn. Hey, man. I mean, I'm just saying, for a guy whose name doesn't immediately, like, ring in your ear.
Exactly.
This guy's had some pretty big fucking, big that's a good pull. I like that. And I loved Payback. That was such a good movie.
Fantastic.
We might have seen that in the theater together when we were, like, 18 or something.
That's possible. Yeah, that's, like, right around when we first started hanging out.
So let me drop a couple more on you, Dave.
Sure.
These two, what do they have in common? Tone, tonality, like the actual look and feel of the movie, and maybe a little bit more extreme examples. One has a more clear path to El Camino than the other does. So let me start with the one that's a little bit more of a reach, and that is my new guy, who I have sort of discovered and decided that I like, Nicholas Winding Refn, Drive, starring Ryan Gosling from, I think, 2013 this movie was.
Sounds right.
Which I thought was a good movie. I never revisited it. It's not exactly like a rewatchable movie. It's not like a movie that you're going to go back and, I mean, like, 2011, by the way, I shouldn't have said 2013. But just the feel and the, I mean, like, I don't know how to put it into words, but come on, this movie had heavy Drive energy, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I could see that. Absolutely. You know, it's a total, the guy trying to, like, get his way out of this, like, fucked up situation that crime has gotten him into.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, one of, as we get ready, you know, a little bit of a preview for upcoming episode, hopefully soon, because we don't know when this movie is going to come out, but Dave and I are going to be talking about Parasite in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so with our eye toward Korean cinema, my all-time favorite Korean movie, Old Boy, which was a Chan-wook Park, and starring a very Jesse, what is Jesse's last name again?
Pinkman.
Jesse Pinkman-esque Min Suk Choi, who was playing the character De Suo, and again a character who has been tortured, has been beaten, has been, like, ruined, has had his life torn down around him. The difference, of course, with De Suo was that he didn't know why. It was a mystery why he was, you know, kept in prison for, I think it was 15 years, if I remember correctly from that movie. Jesse obviously did know why he was being held by the Aryans. But still, what we get is sort of a redemption arc of sorts, mm-hmm. a twisted one, one that's not clean and isn't easy. And yeah, so did you ever watch Old Boy?
I don't think I ever actually saw it. I certainly know of it and everything, and I know
damn,
people
so what we've
it.
Learned about you today is that you've never seen the greatest movie in American film history, and you've never seen, to this point, the greatest movie in Korean film history. Interesting.
There's probably a lot more countries whose greatest film I haven't seen. If we were to dig in, we could start a whole podcast just about that.
You know, they're saying this, I mean, we'll get more into this with Parasite, I suppose, but, like, I was fascinated to find out that, like, no Korean movies have earned any Oscar.
Yeah.
Foreign film, documentary, nothing.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Considering that Korean films, I think, are considered to be, like, pretty much almost on par with American films, like, in terms of their quality. They're
sure
incredible. They have some of the best auteurs.
Yeah, no, they're hugely celebrated filmmakers that come from there. And it's very, very strange that the Academy has never honored any of them. It's really weird. I have a feeling Parasite probably is going to be a big contender this year. But I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully it opens this month here.
So that's what I got for our El Camino.
Great.
Piecing it together.
Well, then I'm going to read down the finished puzzle, and we'll get to our closing thoughts on the movie. We talked about Sex in the City, Veronica Mars, Ash vs. Evil Dead, Triple Frontier, Memento, Fargo, Thief, the films of Sergio Leone, Payback, Drive, and Old Boy. So, yeah, I guess let's go old school. What'd you think of this movie, Q?
I liked it. Like I said earlier, you know, it was just a situation where somebody dropped three episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
It was like, you know what it felt like? It felt like a long bottle episode where, and I don't think they ever did that, if I can remember correctly. I don't think they really did that with Breaking Bad that much. You know, the bottle episodes, it's always when you have to like, it's always when you like, when one of your leads has like a feature film that they're also doing and you have to give them like a couple months off that they normally wouldn't get.
Yeah.
And so you have to be like, okay, we're going to do like an all Jesse episode. And, so it reminded me of that, you know, when a TV show will just drop a bottle episode. The one that was famous for that, obviously, the one that was all bottle episodes was the TV show The Leftovers, where it would just focus on one character a week, basically, and their minimal interactions with the other characters. So I liked it. Again, there's this weird canard that people are throwing around out there where it's like, it wasn't essential. It wasn't necessary. And it's like, what's fucking necessary? Like, what is necessary? I don't know. Like, did you need any of this stuff? Right. Like, of course it's not necessary. It's enjoyable and fun.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also do like to look at movies in that kind of terms. Like, is it necessary? Because I love movies so much that for me, it's like, yeah, I feel like I couldn't live without, The Lighthouse coming up soon. It's got to be so good or I'm just going to be like so upset, you know? But yeah, there's no reason to stretch this out into the whole Netflix debate and stuff like that right now. But to me, I feel like a production company like Netflix or whatever the hell they are at this point, but a company putting out content like this, yeah, it does.
They're a utility, is what they are.
Exactly.
They've turned themselves into a utility.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be that. You're absolutely right. And just because it's using these characters that are so beloved from a series that is considered one of the best of all time, it still doesn't have to be. It's just an entertaining little movie, and I absolutely did enjoy it for what it was. And I do like to talk shit about Netflix quite a bit, but they actually opened it in one theater here in Las Vegas. And so I got to see it in the theater. And did it need to be seen in the theater? Probably not, but I'm glad I got to. And props to Netflix for, trying to make me happy, I guess. They also opened Dolomite Is My Name in theaters this weekend. Two theaters.
I think you're onto something, though, with respect to that being to this maybe considered to be inessential extra little grabs becoming the norm with Netflix as they sort of begin to harvest all of this intellectual property, right? Like, they're gonna do this more.
Yeah,
there's gonna be more quote-unquote inessential things. Yeah. Like, I saw, I don't know if it was in the Piecing Pod Popcorn group, somebody in one of the movie forums that I'm in shared, I mean, like, think about this. The oldest intellectual property I can think of, apart from maybe the fucking Bible, is the Punch and Judy puppet shows. And they made a movie, a fucking prestige, probably going to win or get considered for a number of awards. They made a Punch and Judy movie. A movie about the two puppets that punch each other. About wife beating, basically. And it looks fucking well-made. It looks profound. Well considered. It looks like it's gonna be a really damn good movie. It's got Damon Harriman, who I really fucking love.
What movie is this? What's it called?
It's called Judy and Punch.
Oh yeah, I saw that trailer shared. I didn't get a chance to watch it yet.
From age three, I mean, it's a little politically incorrect now. I mean, it's also just like horrible. But from age like from since we were babies, since our great great grandparents were babies, you could go to any like little fair or, you know, county fair children's event, and you see some marionettes doing the Punch and Judy thing, right? Mm-hmm. The Punch and Judy is just that the man beats up his wife. Yeah. That's all. That's what, that's the joke. That's the long and the short of it.
Yeah.
Somebody took that, which is it, like, as old as time itself, as old as society, that intellectual property. And in a very Disney-like stroke, they turned it into a prestige drama, sort of absurdist farce movie. And I mean, I guess my point is, like, if intellectual property is just up for grabs and people are taking it and remastering it and turning out things like, you know, Judy and Punch and The Joker and coming up with all these different interpretations, yeah, there's going to be a bunch of inessential stuff. So, you know, sit down and pick the stuff that you actually want to waste an hour and a half or 2 hours consuming.
Well, you know, I think that brings us to the end of the El Camino episode. And I think it also is a good setup for something I was thinking about. You know, Disney Plus is launching on November 12th. And I don't know if you saw that like multi-hour long thread of all of the shows and movies that are going to be on it, all the classic Disney properties that's going to be on it. I really feel like that would make for a great Bird Road episode for us to just like going through that and talking about all those different shows and movies and things like that. And like whether or not those are things that you actually care about or I care about or that we'd ever watch ever, you know?
No. I'll say, I'll just save you all the time. No, I'm not going to watch it. All right. Actually, let me say it this way.
Okay.
We asked forever. We as consumers, we asked for this. We asked for this.
Yeah.
We asked for the a la carte option.
We sure did.
People like you said, why is $8 of every one of my Cox bills going towards ESPN?
Mm-hmm.
It's just pointless. Like, I don't want that. Give me an opportunity to pick apart and make a la carte choices about my viewing. And then when streaming became a thing, it became feasible in the realm of on demand, right? Where it was just like, oh, well, we have all these apps. Without getting into the fucking obnoxious friction that all these apps create every single time you have to fucking ping them off of your phone and enter some 6-digit code.
Oh, it signed me out today. Now I got to go find my password.
Remember back in the day when you could just change channels and now you have to fucking go through like double authentication to change to do the effective version of changing channels. Mm-hmm. So that's why my invention that I want to tell you about that I told you about that one day is like the $1 billion invention that I'm never going to make. So if anybody out there wants to do it, then good luck.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. So my point is it's necessity. If there's a thing that absolutely forces me to download and begin paying for an app, then I'll do it. I go back and forth, for instance, on the Stars app, right? The Star, you know, Stars charges $10 for their app.
Yeah.
I don't need the Stars channel. I don't fucking watch it. My wife loves Outlander.
Mm.
So for 10 weeks a year, I pay for the Stars app. I get it for free for a month. And then for the last month and a half, I pay for it. And then I just have to set myself a little Google Calendar reminder, shut off the fucking Stars app after the season finale of Outlander. Mm-hmm. Because why in the world would you need that app?
Yeah.
Right? Similarly, like, look at Hulu, right? Hulu has some things that are decent. As long as this Wu-Tang show is on, I'll probably keep watching it, right? As long as, I don't know, as long as Amazon had The Patriot on, I would keep watching it. I mean, they have to force me. They have to really grab me and force me and be like, look, this is the only place you're gonna see this. This is it. And if this is your show, a show that you love, then like you are basically compelled to get the app.
Mm.
Disney, I don't know how you're gonna do that. And then the one who honestly their programming looks like fucking trash is Apple.
Right.
Yeah. Apple's programming looks like I don't know what you guys think you're gonna do to get me to watch that, but fucking I don't know that stupid morning show with Jennifer Aniston, like that ain't gonna do it. I'm not interested.
You got anything you want to plug?
Eat my ass.
No? I think you just hung up on me.
Hey Hey, I'm Josh Bell.
I'm Jason Harris. Hey, Josh, we're friends in real life, but we're also co-hosts on this new podcast called
Awesome Movie Year, where we take a look back at an awesome year for movies and do a deep dive looking at movies, including the Best Picture winner, the biggest movie at the box office, future cult classics, and more.
Including the biggest flop. And this season, we're doing 1994. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. That could be Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. We're all over the web as well. Get Awesome Movie Year on all the socials and awesomemovieyear.com. So please like us, subscribe, and if you do like us, give us a 5-star rating because we love you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation about El Camino. I want to thank Q for being on the show again. I always love having him on. And you know what? If you're listening and you want us to do some more Bird Road, why don't you write in and let us know? You could tweet at Bird Road Podcast and tell Q that you want more Bird Road. You want us to get back to recording some Bird Road because it's been way too long since our last Bird Road episode. And you want to hear some more Bird Road. So let us know. You can also just tweet at me and I'll forward that tweet over to him in the form of a little screenshot action going on. And I'll send him screenshots of your loving, supportive tweets at Peating Pod that you want more Bird Road episodes coming up. So we'll try to make that happen. I would love to see that happen. So that does it for today's episode of Piecing It Together. You can rate and review Piecing It Together if you enjoy the show over at Apple Podcasts. You can also, of course, always, follow us on social media, join the Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. We also have a Patreon where there is a couple of advanced episodes up right now. Next week on the show, we already have scheduled and ready to post episodes on Stuber and Dolomite Is My Name, but you can listen to them right now on the Patreon if you sign up for anywhere from the $3 tier on up. We're starting to record some bonus content for that Patreon to start building it out and having a lot of stuff. But for now, we're going to be throwing some advanced episodes on there, including those two, which have been up for a few days now. And you'll be able to hear them, of course, for free on the main feed starting Monday for Stuber, next Friday for Dolomite. But it's cool to get podcasts early, right? You guys should like that. So let's leave you guys with a piece of music as we always do here on Piecing It Together. And I got a lot of tracks that would fit with the whole Breaking Bad style vibe. Let's see. You might be able to hear my mouse clicking as I look around my computer to find a good one for you. All right, why don't we go with this track called The Black River, which I always felt like something that could have definitely been in this kind of a Breaking Bad kind of universe or this kind of a show. So enjoy The Black River, and we'll be back next week with more Piecing It Together.
and all points west.